All right, we're back here for another episode of the Surrender Birdies podcast. I'm your host, Alex Dixon, and got a familiar face, but a new guest here, Mr. Adam Hallenbeck, who has been a guest on the Beltway Golfer podcast. Adam, how's it going, man?
Alex, thanks for having me, man. I'm excited to be here. I'm excited for so many reasons. I want to talk to Alex about Alex. I want to hear about his game. I want to hear his thoughts. I'm so used to listening to your interviews that I look forward to a little bit different style, a little more volleying on topics. This is what I'm all about. I love it.
Absolutely. I appreciate you being interested. But we're going to be excited. So you were on the podcast, the Beltway Golfer podcast, with your former podcast host when you were doing the Mediocre Golf podcast. Let me get this out of the back. Is the Mediocre Golf podcast still active?
Yes, everything about it is active, but I would say it's on a bit of a break or a hiatus. I have goals, I have ideas of things I want to do, but as a one man show right now, life is very much getting in the way. So I've done this show. Or I mean, I've done a show for more than 4 years, and for a very long majority of that, it was every week, and it was in stone that this was happening regardless. And right now, just the way with my life's going, I don't have that room to say this is happening regardless. I have a lot of other things that are taking priority. So golf is still very much a very big priority, and talking about golf is a lot of fun to me, and I am not willing to let it go. So it is still happening.
No, it's wild though about what's wild and cool about podcasting is there's so many different types of podcasts. There's so many different types of golf podcasts that, you know, there's some golf podcasts that are really doing news and current events on the PGA Tour and maybe have some major sponsors that they need to stay on a pretty strict schedule. Like I'm thinking Shotgun Start that like churns out 3 podcasts a week. And it's really like current events of what's going on in the world of professional golf. For so many people, like I think your podcast and Beltway Golfer podcast, I have sponsors sporadically. It's not even that consistent. Like there's no, yeah. And I'm basically a one man band. There's no one like really like, you know, cracking the whip, making sure that, for instance, I put out Beltway Golfer podcast every week or every 2 weeks or even every month. It's the power of the podcast is you can kind of do it wherever you want, whenever you want. And when you have kind of a smaller audience that I think Beltway Golfer does, and I think Mediocre Golf Podcast does, compared to some of the larger ones out there, you know, the people that are listening, the people that know the podcast, like if you post one, if you come back in 3 months or you take a month off, or if you take 6 months off, like they're going to come back and see what's up, because it's going to pop up in their feed. It's going to pop up on their phone, and you can share on social media like, hey, I got one. And you know, I don't think you lose your audience like people would assume.
I think you're right. Ideally, I would like to have it more on more of a schedule. It's not going to be on a weekly schedule going forward when it does start coming back more on a regular basis. But like you're saying, when I put my first one out by myself, it was cool getting the reactions. I even still get some reactions from people who are like, how did I miss this? There was an episode that came out that I didn't even see. This is great. Like it's a lot of fun interacting with people. I think it's really cool. The people out there that listen that I don't even know that still send messages, you know, like that send an email that drop a note and say, hey, I really look forward to hearing your show. Like it's nice hearing a voice that I'm familiar with, who I feel like I've become friends with from listening to you for years. So I do look forward to getting it back out there. Yeah.
And for those that aren't familiar, your Mediocre Golf podcast was certainly different than Beltway Golfer podcast. And in a way, it's kind of what I'm trying to make this Surrender Birdies a little bit, where it's a little more conversational, sure. A little bit more about, you know, the rounds of golf and just kind of my own takes and opinions and rehashing some things that have happened at golf courses. Because to your point, you know, when I'm doing the Beltway Golfer podcast and I'm interviewing people, it's a lot less like a radio show where you get to know that radio host. You get to like almost feel like you know that person, or you feel like you're friends with that person, where I think you got a lot of that because you're literally recounting the ups and downs and emotions of a round of golf, and you're doing it every single week, and you did it for, or you have been doing it for several years, that it feels more like that radio host that, that you know.
I think me and Eddie and I learned over the course of doing it what was good and what wasn't good. In some ways, we were a little hard-headed, and it took us a while to figure it out. I think we talked much more about PGA Tour events than we ever needed to. Sometimes when I listen to an old episode, it's a little cringy. Like, why did we do this? But then we learned we should only talk about what's going on in the world of golf if it's of interest, you know, if we have a particular take, if it's a little different. I don't really just want to say, man, did you see that guy eagle the 17th hole? Like, who cares? Like, I didn't want that for the show. But I think we kind of learned a little bit more about that when it came to storytelling about our own rounds. Because if I play Rattlewood Golf Course 20 times in a year, how many times do you want to hear about exactly how I shot? But sometimes it's interesting when it's like, oh, I had the best round of the year. I do want to mention a couple things that I figured out. I had the worst round of the year. Why do I suck so bad? Listen to this. Like,
sure.
So, but going hole by hole I personally don't enjoy it. You know the saying, there's nothing more interesting than talking about your own rounds of golf. And there's sometimes nothing more boring than hearing about somebody else's. So sure. Going shot by shot is not ideal, but hey, these are the few things that were very of interest during the round of golf. That's what we got better at as we did it.
But it's also, I mean, the golf crazies of the world, which, you know, I think we're both in that category, but anybody listening to our podcast are probably in that category. You know, I would never have guessed that talking about, you know, your own round of golf, almost going shot by shot, not quite, but almost going shot by shot or hole by hole, anybody would listen to. But then again, I also thought that posting your round of golf on YouTube and going shot by shot would take off, and it's the biggest thing in the world. I mean, I only recently started getting into watching some of these YouTube golfers, and it's entertaining. And I get why they are so popular and get hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of views. It's, you know, if you're a golf sicko, you're a golf sicko, and you just kind of enjoy watching it.
That's very true. So I hope you aren't upset about me talking about other shows on here at all, but like,
no, please,
one of my favorite podcasts.
I want to hear about all the shows that you listen to. Go.
Well, one of my favorite shows before I did a podcast was Chasing Scratch. And yeah, these guys are unbelievable at storytelling. And it's two guys, Mike and Eli. And I think they came on as, I think they were like 11 handicaps when they first started. Their goal was to get down to scratch. And the first season, they, you know, they're talking about all these thoughts and all these things they want to do to get better. And one of the guys did a hole by hole, shot by shot recount of how he ended up shooting like one over par. Like, he had never shot even par before, but like the drama and the buildup and the music and the storytelling was so perfect. I love that show. I haven't been listening the last season, but it's the kind of show that you can just binge and hear how they did over the course of a year. It's pretty fantastic. And I had a friend reach out to me the other day, and he's like, I hear Mike and Eli talking a lot about you, Adam, on Chasing Scratch. And I was like, is it a new show, or are we talking about an old one? He's like, no, I just started, but geez, you're like every other episode.
And oh, that's, like, funny.
Yeah, no, because I was interacting with them through social media and started talking to them. And those were the guys that helped me start a show. And I'm sorry, one other thing here, Alex, is Foreplay Podcast is not my favorite podcast. It is very popular. The Barstool engine is big, and it works, and they get a lot of views and a lot of downloads, and they do a fair amount of videos on YouTube. I do like the series they do with Trent, who I guess was the worst golfer of the four. Yeah.
It's on and YouTube, or is that social media, or what?
It's on YouTube, and they did a Breaking 100 series. He had never broken 100, and I don't want to like give it away if people are going to search this out, but he did end up breaking 100 after like 10 or 12 episodes, and then they restarted it with a Breaking 90 series. And nice. I think it's interesting. It does speak to like what a golf nerd I am, that I'm watching this guy who's oftentimes shooting 98 hole by hole, shot by shot. But I think a lot of golfers can live through the, oh, I can't believe he did that again. Like, wouldn't he know better? Oh, why can't he see that his alignment is off? he's hitting a slice every time. Why is he aiming at the flag? Of course he's going to miss the green to the right. I think we all kind of see and can judge and can relate. And it is interesting, though. Even though I don't really like that brand, I still find myself consuming some of their products.
Sure. I mean, those guys put out so much content that I agree. I don't listen to Foreplay Pod. I want to listen to a couple ever. But they put so much stuff out that a lot of it comes across my feed and a lot of it I end up watching. And a lot is good. That's interesting you say about Chasing Scratch. What they've done, I think you've originally turned me on to them. I wasn't familiar with them. This is several years ago. But what they do such a good job of is, one, their production value is really good, like really high. Like, I'm the opposite of that. My production value is garbage, and I'm aware of it.
You and me both.
But theirs is A, really good, but I think the B part, and it's built into the whole premise of their show, Chasing Scratch. It's this narrative of following this, you know, this thing they're trying to attain, where each episode doesn't seem so random. And they really almost make it episodic, each episode, like a true episode, you know, in this journey that they do a really good job of. Met those guys. Well, I met them at the PGA show, really only briefly, but yeah, real nice guys. And I every once in a while, I still look at the kind of the podcast rankings on that Chartable website, which I think you and I have talked about. Wildly inconsistent, but they're pretty consistently in the top five golf podcasts, rightfully so.
Yeah. Yeah, they're impressive.
Any other golf podcasts that you said you haven't been listening to them recently? You get in the car, you've got a 2-hour drive. What do you listen to?
The Junkies.
Okay,
that's generally where I go. I'm all in locally with the Junkies, and I do enjoy the fact that they are talking more and more golf these days. I feel like with a couple of them joining clubs and playing more, I do love them. But if I am listening to a golf podcast, I really enjoy No Laying Up. I think I'm so jealous of them. I'm jealous of what they do. I like their production value. I like the way they present. I like them a lot. I'm very jealous of No Laying Up. They're great.
I think they're, some of their video stuff, especially, like I just started watching their Tour Sauce. I think it's called Tour Sauce. Their Australian one they just put out in the last week.
Yep.
And yeah, again, the production quality is so, so high. It's so good that it's just really unbelievably impressive. And it's more kind of shocking that they probably have 100,000 views or whatever it is, but it's almost shocking they don't have more. It's that good a production that it's kind of mind blowing.
I think oftentimes with a lot of these guys, they're kind of like the rebels, you know, they're kind of the hip thing. And then they kind of get in bed a little bit with it. Like, I feel like they were the people making fun of the PGA Tour at first. And then all of a sudden the PGA Tour is having them up into the booth to talk about tournaments. Like, they are friends with all the PGA Tour players. And then they signed, I'm struggling. What's the name of the guy who used to work for the PGA Tour? Who's their video guy?
DJ Piasky.
DJ. I could not pull DJ. I can't believe I couldn't think of DJ's name. And I think it's interesting that they're back in Australia now, since that was their first tourist sauce. But they said, you know, the production value of that was not good. We filmed everything on our iPhones. And now they're out there with a crew who are just along to record everything. And I love their tourist sauce episodes. I love their Strapped episodes. Have you ever watched that, Alex? Where
I have. Oh, yeah. I saw a couple of them. I saw the Baltimore one was great. Maybe I saw a New Mexico one. I haven't seen all of them, but I've seen a few. Yeah.
They just do good stuff. I think they're a good mix of funny, good players, players that struggle, knowledgeable people, people who have interesting takes. Like, it's just a great blend. Love it.
Sure. I think what you see, and I've struggled with this myself, and just kind of doing what I've been doing here with Beltway Golfer, is, there's an old saying about, you know, doing things by yourself versus a group of people. That couldn't be a worse way of recounting whatever that saying is. But the fact that they had like a team, that they started as a foursome, like four tight friends starting together and building something, is so much different than trying to build something by yourself. Building something by yourself, like, you don't have other people's ideas. You don't have other people kicking you in the pants when you're slacking. You don't have other, you know, you're not working together. It's just so much harder to succeed when you don't have kind of partners kind of in the trenches with you. And I think that's one of the, I think that's one of the ways to your point why No Laying Up and others have done so well is, you know, they started as a group. So you have all these different kind of perspectives, all these different quality of golfers and people bringing different things to the table. And, you know, they've certainly grown. I think their team is whatever it is, 8 or 10 now, but
sure.
No, I agree. What they bring to the, to kind of the golf media landscape. I think they're doing like, they're doing the alternative, well, I don't know what they're calling it, but the alternative telecast for the PGA Championship this week, which is a huge deal.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. They are, they're everywhere now. I mean, there's, and, but they're kind of like a little bit like the fried egg, like that they do a post episode or going into majors, they do something every single day, a recap, a preview. Like it's, it, it, they do a lot. They bust their butts. I think they work hard and they play hard. And for that, I am envious. I am and jealous both.
Yeah, no, they're working. I mean, I had Tron on the Beltway Golf podcast, gosh, 3 or 4 years ago. Yep. The only other ones guys I've met, I met Big Randy and Solly at the at Congressional last year at the KPMG
with the women's event
champion. Yeah, the women's PGA Championship. And my takeaway was, you know, they were not that I expected them to not be, but they were working. I mean, they were pulling long hours. They were not, you know, they were not fraternizing a whole lot. They weren't even really joking or laughing unless they were interviewing a player. They were there busting their ass, which I found impressive. I think I was there with a guy who was helping me out one day and bumped into, I think maybe Solly back near the media event, like way out of the way. It was just three of us kind of passing and we were already like having a beer and I was like, hey, Solly, want to join us for a beer? And he was, you know, all business. So he was, you know, they're busting their ass and it's paying off.
Yeah, no doubt.
Anyway, so we're already 20 minutes in. We have a few things. Go ahead. It sounds like you want to say something.
I wanted to ask you. I knew that when this show started, you were going to talk a little bit more about your game. So I want to know, have you played recently? And if so, I want to know kind of where have you played and what have you shot?
Sure. Well, so here's the thing. I mean, one of the things that I'll reveal is I don't play nearly as much, certainly as much as I used to. And as much as my social media account would appear that I do. In fact, the last Surrender Birdies podcast I put out was 2 weeks ago. And I think in that episode, I talked about my last round of golf. And I don't think I haven't played since. Which because my last round of golf was at 1757. And I talked about my round there. It was the back nine was solid, but the front nine was a total disaster. I'm trying to remember what I shot. I shot either a shot either an 89 or 90. It was bad. I think I shot like 50. I think I shot 50 on the front. Or maybe we'll go on 51, 39, something like that. The front nine was just a total disaster. So, but I talked about it in that podcast and had some issues with 1757 that I talked about. But
I listened. I heard. I think we can maybe get into some of those sure. thoughts. But I mean, I just want
to
ask you.
The last 2 weeks, instead of playing, I mean, I went out to the – I was doing a little more media. I went out to Belhaven for the four ball. 2 days in a row and I wasn't playing. I was just kind of walking around talking to guys and taking pictures, which was a really cool event. And then I also went out to, I got invited to an event out at Whiskey Creek, but it was the same day that the US Open local qualifier was at PBDI. So that was another one where I spent the entire day at a golf course. I was out there for, I don't know, 8 or 9 hours, but never picked up a club.
So, yeah, I mean, I saw that you were doing the Belhaven stuff. I think you put some stuff up on your story and I was kind of perusing some of the names that were on the leaderboard, at least after the first day. And one of the guys stood out to me. It's a guy that I had interviewed and a guy that used to be my neighbor who was an unbelievable college golfer. And his name was Ray Sheedy. And he was playing with a guy by the name of Chris Beloga, who's a pretty good player in the state as well. And from what I understand, he messaged me out of nowhere. I hadn't talked to him in a while. And tells me, hey, just want to let you know, I'm playing in a Hive event tomorrow at Whiskey Creek, which I'm pretty sure is the one that was happening.
Then I did meet him. So I did meet him then. So yes, it was the Hive event that I was invited out to. I said no because I was going to the US Open local qualifier. the day was getting long and the US Open local qualifier was taking a while, but almost all, there's so many entrants in the local qualifier that it basically always goes to a playoff because it's not just the winner. It's the top seven, at least this year for at PBDI, went on to the sectionals. And so they were like, it's basically 100% chance, not 100% chance, but almost a 90% plus chance that's going to do a playoff. And so I didn't, you know, I'd already taken a bunch of pictures. I walked the course like almost twice and I was like, all right, I've been out here for a while. So I shot over to Whiskey to put the drone in the air. And I knew that the Hive was having that event. So after I had the drone in the air, I popped into the clubhouse and those guys were all having their post round beer. And the first guy I run into was Dom Lee, who's Bandon Dunes on Instagram, who was sitting right there. And he happened to be sitting right next to a guy who said, oh, I'm buddies with Adam Hallenbeck from the Mediocre Golf Podcast. So that's gotta be the guy.
There you go. There you go. And well, he had messaged me. I had heard that he won the Hive event.
Oh, we did. Okay.
And he and I said, hey, congrats. I sent him a message and said, congratulations. And he said, you know, I played and had the worst round I've had in years at, I'm guessing, the Belhaven event. I'm is it a 2-day event? 2 days, right?
Yeah, it's 3 days.
Okay. So either I guess it was the second or third day because it looked like he played a pretty good round the first day. And then he said he shows up to Whiskey Creek and has an unbelievable round and has 9 birdies in the first 18 holes they play and went on to win, I guess, gross for the amount of people that were playing. So I think golf's funny like that. So now this leads me to one more question for you, Alex.
Sure.
What is the biggest up and down you've ever had when playing? Like, 1 week you shoot the best round you've ever had. The next time you get out, you shoot the worst, or vice versa.
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I'd have to go look at some of my historical gin records of all my post rounds. I don't know. I mean, I've had a lot of bad rounds.
That's fair.
You know, the bad rounds outnumber the good. I will say that. I can't think of when it's been so dramatic. I'm sure it's happened. I can't think of a good example.
I've had a few. when I was newer to golf, and shooting any round in like the 70s was spectacular. I shot a 76 at Redgate, and I remember just being on top of the world because I think Redgate used to kick my butt, especially the closing stretch, that 16th hole.
There's a lot of blind tee shots there.
So 76, and then 2 days later, I went on a trip to Myrtle Beach and played Litchfield Country Club and shot an even 100. So that's the bad side of it. My favorite on the other swing is I had the luxury of playing out at Whistling Straits, and there's multiple courses there on Whistling Straits, but there's the Straits course and right next to it is the Irish course. They're both Whistling Straits properties. I played the Straits course where they had the Ryder Cup and PGA Championships. And it was one of these days where we had a caddy and the caddy would say, just don't go right. Anything left of that is perfect. And I'd be like, gotcha. And I would hit it right over and over again. I just did whatever he said. You don't want to be here. And I shot a 101. The next day I play the Irish course, which rating and slope wise is on par with the Straits course. I shot a 73. Go figure. Same guy, different day.
That's a huge gap. So, you know, there's a couple of things that I know we wanted to talk about. One of the things that, you know, we brought up some local public golf, but I posted, and I've talked about some of my drone videos here. I posted a drone video the other day on Instagram of Blue Mash, and you chimed in a comment, you know, kind of a very firm comment on your opinion of how you feel about Blue Mash. And I'm not here to necessarily argue with you. But I know that we wanted to at least bring it up and we could talk about your thoughts on Blue Mash, but also your thoughts on you know, where prices have gone on some of these higher end public courses in the DMV.
Yeah, I would love it if you posted Blue Mash. You gave a little bit about it. I think you talked a little bit about the price, within that post. Am I wrong?
I did. So I posted a video and I just became a very loose background on the course and, you know, Arthur Hills and blah, blah, blah. And then at the end, I did say that it's now run, or now it's now owned by Kemper Sports. And they were one of the first in this region to employ dynamic pricing. Which a lot of courses now have. To be fair, a lot of courses now have. But the other thing that I find just hilarious, I booked a tee time there, I don't know, a couple months ago, and I had to call to cancel. And this guy picked up, and he was like he was on the other side of the world. And I was like, well, I just called the clubhouse. I just called like the number on their website. I was like, wow, this is the first golf course, at least locally, that I've ever encountered that's using like an international call center just to call the pro shop, which I found pretty wild.
That is, I don't know if I'm aware of any other courses that are like that. I can't think of any.
Some of the big resorts have like call centers, but they're even those I think are like domestic.
Usually you call the pro shop and you get put on hold, and then you're very aware you're calling the pro shop because they're annoyed that you're talking to them and taking too long to get whatever it is that you need to get out. Yeah, so you posted that. The aerial looked good. I think you talked about the dynamic pricing, and I think you kind of got me to go in and look and see, well, what is this pricing like? And I'm pretty sure I looked up like the first weekend spot that I could, and it was $129. And I was just like, yeah, they can kiss my ass. Like, there's no way Blue Mash is worth that. And I will even say it kind of got me thinking a little bit more of like just how crazy the pricing has gotten in this region. I have a lot of thoughts about this. Do you want me to go on some more?
Yes, but I do want you to. But I mean, I'm not going to. Yes, but I do. There is one thing I want to bring up. But
please,
I can do that now. So, the original owners of the course that started it, Tom Healy and I'm forgetting, I don't have his name in front of me. I think it's Joe Hills, who's Arthur Hills' son. They also opened Waverly Woods. I remember reading an article, I think it might've been like the Washington City paper. This is like years ago, 10, 15 years ago, where, because Blue Mash for the longest time, and I think still is the only privately owned public course in Montgomery County. The other 7, 8, or 9, or however many, how many does the Montgomery County Revenue Authority have? 9, 7?
Nine, I believe.
All those are run by the Montgomery County Revenue Authority, which is like this quasi public private entity that does receive funding from the county through an amusement tax in the county.
But they're for profit. They run separate from the government.
I think you're right, but they benefit from that tax. Like, I don't think they are not private. They are not a private entity, and I don't have all the details now. I should get them on, but they are not private in a private business in the same way that Blue Mash was. Because Tom Healy, in this interview, Tom Healy's beef was his own greens fees have to be added in amusement tax. In a percentage of that amusement tax is going to his competitors for course improvements that are basically trying to take his business. And that was his beef. So he's like, I'm one entity, they're nine, and I have to charge my customers a tax that they get a portion of. He's like, it's such an uphill battle. So that's all I say because I know where you're going, where like versus Montgomery County courses. And listen, I love municipal golf. I'm Mr. Muni, but you know, I think there's other factors.
There are a lot. And as I've talked to you about prior, like I struggle a little bit because I could argue with myself on some of these points, but I am 44 years old. I hate to have like the old man stance back in my day, but like when I was getting into golf, weekend rounds at the Montgomery County courses were in the 30s, like $30, $35, $39 to walk and play Rattlewood. I reference Rattlewood a lot. I live pretty close to it. I think it's a fun course. It's always in great shape. It is a favorite of mine. It costs $65, $64, $65 to play there on the weekend to walk now. If you ride, it's $15 more. So it's $79 or $80 to play Rattlewood, which kind of blows my mind. Okay. I'm very much a walker. When I think about golfing, I think about walking. So luckily that saves me some money. but $80 for Radwood is crazy. $130 for Blue Mesh is crazy. Like I have trouble like stomaching some of these prices. And I take a lot of issue with the fact that COVID drove so many people to golf because it was outside and social distancing and something they could do. Because prior to COVID, all we talked about was how do we grow the game? How do we grow the game? Guess what I never hear anymore is people asking how we can grow the game. Because I can't get a tee time anywhere on a weekend anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, like, but I hear you. But that's such a balance, because one of the reasons they wanted to draw the game is because at the time we were losing golf courses. Golf courses were closing left and right.
We were losing underperforming golf courses, courses that were out of the way, courses that were struggling for various reasons. I agree. And there's a big part of me that wishes some of these courses had just lasted a little bit longer. You know, the Glendales of the world. I want to say you and I might have been at Glendale on one of the last days they were open. And yeah. I played there and I kind of wondered, like, man, if they knew that so much was going to be driven to golf, like, would they have sold? Would the Red Gates of the world still be around? I mean, that's just a couple. There are a lot of courses that have closed in the air. But I what I think back to, Alex, is like prior to COVID, Montgomery County used to offer member for a day deals because they were struggling to get people out there. And a course like Little Bennett used to offer on a Friday for $35 member for a day, which included free range balls, donuts, like breakfast and coffee, cart, your round, lunch included, and free replays. $35. So I was eating that up, you know?
Sure.
Literally and figuratively. So then now we're talking about a course that's like $69, $75 on a Friday just for the round. Oh, you want range balls? That'll be $7 more. You know, like everything is just nickel and dime. Like this Grow the Game initiative.
I just don't. I sorry, go ahead. I won't cut you off.
I wanted to just say I'm kind of a little bit more in the camp of we need to shrink the game a little bit. Seriously, like it is. Yeah. I'm happy that golf courses are doing well. I'm happy that they're thriving to an extent, but like $130 for Blue Mesh, they're not getting my money. That's all I'm saying. Like, there's no way I can't justify it. I don't think it's that great a course for the money.
I'll say a couple things. One, I'll say I don't think the Grow the Game. I don't think the reason golf courses are so crowded is because of the marketing effort hashtag Grow the Game. I think that was a garbage marketing effort. I think golf courses are packed because golf is awesome.
But was golf awesome like 4 years ago prior to COVID? It was awesome. I think so. Maybe not that many people figured out.
There was just a lot of other it had bad connotations. I think social media helped golf a lot. I think Instagram, I think YouTube have helped golf a lot. Obviously, COVID helped golf a lot. And people have just gotten into it, and it's gotten popular. But I don't think the Grow the Game. I don't think the Grow the Game is to blame personally. And I totally understand what you're saying. I totally hear you. I mean, it's tough to get a good D time on the weekends, but I do think wishing that it shrinks is kind of a be careful what you wish for kind of deal.
I hear you. So I want to ask you though, like if Blue Mesh is $130, what do you think you're getting for that money? I'm sorry to keep picking on Blue Mesh. Just they were the one that kind of initiated this. Like I've had people kind of beat me up because I say you have views of power lines the whole round. Like you have views of power lines the whole round though. So what goes into it? This is nitpicky. I'm sure you're going to have listeners that beat me up for some of these takes, but like maybe the greater question is for you, Alex. And then I'll tell you mine is what makes a good golf course to you? Like, do you love every golf course you play?
No, definitely not. I will say I'm sure I hate less golf courses than the average dickhead on Twitter.
Okay, so like when you play a course like 1757 and there's a data center like 10 yards off the side of a hole, is that something like you look at and you're like, eh, it's just the way it is? Nitpick?
No. The data set, I have no beef with I think the data center is hilarious. I don't blame 1757 for the data center. I mean, they don't own that land. Like,
understood.
I'm sure they're going to try to build some trees. I blame 1757 for, I forget what hole it is. I think it's like hole 8 or something. It's in the corner of the property and it's just a total bullshit hole. Like, that's what I blame 1757 for. I blame 1757 for how many, I know it's private now, but how many tea times they jammed together and everybody was a twosome and none of the twosomes would get together and there was no marshal out there. And I get that it's a private course, but everybody was stacked upon each other. And there's all these twosomes just like not even talking to each other, but there's, you know, they're, you know, there was three different twosomes on a tee and they're not doing anything about it. And so it was like the whole vibe there kind of sucked. That's what I blame 1757 for. What's happening just off the property, like the data center, I find that hysterical. But no, like okay. if it's a good golf hole, it's a good golf hole.
Okay. So in some ways, it sounds like the way a course is managed might matter a little more to you sometimes than like
way
the
more.
Scenery.
Not sometimes. Not sometimes.
100%
100% of the time.
Okay.
I'm a fan of golf course architecture. I appreciate golf course design and architecture. I've had a bunch of architects on the podcast, but what I appreciate about a golf course is the experience and the vibe way more than, you know, was this fairway wide enough to give me different options into the green?
Got it. Width and angles, right? Is that like that's
sure. I appreciate all sure. that, but you can give me all the width and angles in the world, and if the whole vibe of the day out there is crap, then you know I'm not going to have a lot of great things to say about the golf course.
Well, I'm going to glom onto something you're saying. You're calling it a vibe, and I'm calling it like the fun factor, which for me sure. is like how much fun is this course? Like, do I walk away like loving it, or do I walk away thinking like, that designer is an asshole for putting this here. This was dumb. Like this was too, this was impossible. There's out of bounds on this side, red stakes on this side. And I have to carry over water. Like, yeah, there's some holes where a designer's like, what were they thinking? Like you're talking about jamming something into the back of the property. I think a little bit about that with certain holes. Actually, Arthur Hills as a designer in general, I've been on I've listened to other podcasts where I've heard the person say, you know, if you're struggling to find a course, just find a good Arthur Hills course nearby and you're golden. I feel the complete opposite. Arthur Hills designs actually bug the hell out of me. And like the name kind of drives up the price of the course usually. And most of the Arthur Hills courses around, not my favorite. Been over to Maryland National. We can talk about the holes there.
You know, it's funny. I haven't been to Maryland National in a really long time. And one of the reasons, going back to vibe, I did a post. I should find it and share it when I post this podcast. I did a post, I think it was on Instagram. It might have been on Twitter. This is probably 3 or 4 years ago, where I was up in that area for work. I was up in Frederick. And I stopped by Maryland National because I had and I was doing the podcast at the time. I had the social media, but I was by myself and I can't remember if I had played Maryland National at that point yet or not, but I popped into Maryland National and I mean, it was a weekday. It was probably 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon. There was maybe 5 cars in the parking lot. And I walked in and said, hey, I'd love to just play 9. And the guy at the counter said, sorry, we only do 18. And I literally thought he was joking. Like I was like, you're not going to let me just play 9. Like I can't. It was funny. Like he didn't even give me the option, which I would almost respect. Like, well, you can pay for 18 and just play 9. He didn't even say that. He was just like, no, it's only 18. And I
that's
just
all you're allowed
at
to play.
It.
You can't even walk off.
I mean, of course you can do whatever you want, but we kind of just had like a little like 5 second standoff, just kind of looking at each other. And I just kind of laughed and I walked out. And I did a post about it. I was just like, the absurdity of that policy is kind of what I'm talking about. Like it just turned me off so badly that, you know, I didn't rush back there.
So what about like, so you, I am getting this feeling of like course management is so big to you. What about like marshals? Like you ever had experiences where like a marshal's ruined your experience? Anything like that? Ruin your experience?
No, starters for all right. I get a kick out of starters. I mean, yeah, sometimes starters can be wild, but no, a starter, starter's really got to do something wrong for you to like turn your whole day around before you've even teed off in the first tee.
So for me, Alex, like the fun factor is big. I do believe memorability. So like, you know, I have played certain courses where like a lot of the holes run together and I'm like, well, that was a dog leg left. That was a dog leg right. That was a dog leg left. That's boring. Like at some point, like I want some sort of interest, some sort of memorability where I can walk off and be like, oh man, I can almost think of every hole in my head. Like those are usually pretty good courses. I do appreciate a little bit more of feeling like I'm in nature. Like the data center probably would bug me personally a little bit. I could kind of point to, I played a new course. I do have a bit of a goal to play every course in Maryland. That is a goal going forward. I know you've interviewed somebody that was like that on your podcast. But I got out and played Forest Park for the first time this year.
Sure. And one of the Baltimore Five.
Yep. And yeah, you know, I think a detractor is the fact that I played it in winter. I really would like to play it again in summer and see how I like it, how it looks differently. But you know, the front nine, you're in and out of roads and the city and people all around. And, but the back nine there is awesome. Like I thought the back nine was so stunningly different, and I thought the two nines just played completely different. So it did give me like pause on how I felt about the course in general, but I can also then point back to I've had the luxury of playing the old course in Scotland, and that's a course that's in and around town, you know. Sure. The difference between there are some significant differences between Forest Park and the old course. Let me tell you, start by saying like St. Andrews lives and breathes golf. Like that course, like people come out and watch as you're finishing on 18 and clap for you when you make a birdie, versus when I played Forest Park, there's like sirens driving by as I'm teeing off on hole six. Like it's a different vibe for sure. But I did like that course actually. So yeah, even some of those like give me pause on what I like, what I don't like. I do agree with what you're saying. Like I hear what you're saying.
I view it a little bit like, I totally agree. I'm going back to the, like my main pieces are memorability and variability. Like, yeah, I'm the same way. Can you remember all to 18 holes? If there's too much space between a green and the next tee box and it's all in the woods and you can't remember one hole to the next, that's a big thumbs down. If there's not enough variability, you know, all four par threes, you're using the same club, the par fives are similar, the par fours are just up and back, all that's negative. So memorability and variability is huge.
I think another thing that I started kind of like that got me going on all this was wondering, so where does the value lie? You know, like maybe, and that's maybe what I've personally sought out. I know you play East Potomac Park a lot, right? Like you get out there and that's close to you and you play it a lot and your buddies play it and you enjoy it. It's close. You've mentioned that. So for me, the value, like I would say the value courses that I like, Rattlewood, I enjoy it. It's super close. I think it is a good value. I think it's fun. I think the conditions are generally pretty darn good. I think Clustered Spires and Frederick is a good value, fun course. And then maybe one of my favorite value courses nearby is Quail Valley, which is just across the line up in Pennsylvania. But
I haven't played
that. You can play there on a weekend walking for $45. And it is in fantastic shape. It is tough. Yes, there are homes around it a little bit, but like they're not on top of you. And so all these things that I love, I do understand that there are prices associated with them. So for me, I guess that's where Blue Mash kind of, I'm like, the value's not there. Why is it $130?
Well, let me say this. And I'm not here to defend Blue Mash necessarily to your opinions.
I'm sorry, I'm beating them up so much.
No. But I will say this. So here's a handful of, because you're comparing it to, again, the Montgomery County Revenue Authority courses, which, you know, I get is a quasi private entity, but they still receive money from the county. If we're just talking about other privately owned public courses, these kind of daily fee courses in the area, right?
Yes.
Blue Mash is not crazy expensive. I'm going to give you a few examples here. So please. In the same range, so like Stonewall down in Gainesville, Virginia, right running the same on Lake Manassas, right across from
RTJ.
Basically the same price, $128, $129. I looked this weekend, you can play. I mean, I probably lowered it because it's raining, but you can play for $115. But basically Stonewall is the exact same price, okay? But we're gonna do a bunch here. You know, you go up into those, like the Frederick Five, as you call them, you know, the PB Dye, Worthington Manor, Whiskey, Musket Ridge, sure. Maryland National, right?
Yep.
How would you guess from most expensive to least expensive, would you think those five fall?
expensive.
We're talking peak rates, the most expensive rate I could find in the next 30 days.
I thought most expensive is Whiskey Creek in the 150 to 160 range. Is that an okay guess? Or no, maybe you can say
that is accurate. That is correct. I got up 154 was the rate.
I was shocked to see the other day that Worthington Manor was 124, or it was 120 to 129, somewhere in that range. And I was, my head almost exploded, because I always think of Worthington Manor being like an $89 to $99 course. I think PB Dye is right there with them. I have not looked up Maryland National in a while. I can't really speak to that. What other course am I missing in the five?
Muscat.
I love Muscat Ridge. I bet they're right on par with Worthington and PB Dye, 120.
So you're right. I mean, so Whiskey is, I found 154. PB Dye, Worthington Manor, Muscat, and Maryland National are all kind of within $10 each other. I found Maryland National at 129. I actually only saw Worthington Manor at 119. I saw PB Dye and Worthington Manor at 119, Muscat at 126, Maryland National 129. So they're all kind of right there within $10 of each other. Whiskey being the one that's, you know, 30% more than the two others on the same exit 26 mm-hmm. off I-270, and mm-hmm. you know, a good $25 more than Blue Mash. You know, if we want to keep going down this rabbit hole, if you want to stick to the relatively DMV area, and yeah. You know, DMV is controversial, but you know, this the general area that we're talking about, we can go higher. Others that are higher than or in that kind of category,
that daily fee range. Tell me,
like Westfields, for instance. You know, Westfields again, 120, right in that kind of range.
Yeah.
What else? Queenstown on the other side of the bridge.
The river course.
147 for the river. Here's the one that that makes people pull their hair out. What I'm getting at here is, like, I don't disagree with you that all these are expensive, but I don't think Blue Mash is an outlier, I guess is my point. Raspberry Falls.
Raspberry Falls is ridiculously expensive. Every time I see it, I'm like, well, I'm glad I played there before, because I'm never playing there again.
191 next weekend, Saturday morning.
Like I said. Wow.
The only other two I looked up kind of in this region, and this isn't, I wouldn't consider this kind of the Beltway region or DMV or whatever you want to call it, but it's still kind of in this area. You go down to Ocean City, Baywood Greens near, you know, kind of in the Delaware Beach area, 220. Peak rate.
I like Baywood Greens. That is unbelievable.
The links at Lighthouse Sound takes the cake, though, at 225.
I'm glad I played there. I'm never playing there again.
last time I played Lighthouse Sound, it was in garbage shape. But you know, that could have just been the day I went.
Well, you know, one funny. But, I think one to throw in there for all this, Alex, is a course like Bully Rock, which has hosted LPGA sure. championships and used to be 150 when everything else was cheaper. And I guess they're so far off the beaten path, they've dropped their prices a lot. I see a lot of like $100 prices.
I actually have them on the sheet at 115.
Okay. That's a good, I do like that place. That's a big course. That's a fun one. Yeah. I guess I think the thing that all those courses that you've mentioned, they're in and out of the top 10 courses to play in Maryland. Like the courses, like on all the lists, if you're a Golf Digest, a Golf Week, Golf Magazine kind of guy, those are the courses that are in and out. So they're getting the publicity and people are coming to see them. I don't know if Blue Mash is on that list that often. I'm sorry to Blue Mash. I'm feeling bad now, actually.
No, you shouldn't.
I'm intrigued by the playability and the value. Where those things come hand in hand is where I'm usually like, yeah, that's great. And yes, I do beat up the Montgomery County courses a lot, like, because I think the value kind of does. By the way, if I can speak to like how well they're doing, I knew you and I got together with the guys over at Golf DMV and played at Laytonsville like a year and a half ago. And I remember going in there and looking, we sat and had a couple beers afterwards. And I looked up at above the bar or whatever, wherever you get the food, they took their menus down and put up three or four flat screen TVs, like three or four 60-inch TVs to put the menu up. And I was kind of like,
this is what you're spending your money on?
This place is doing well. Yeah, I know this place is doing well because they're just decided, hey, let's just put up some TVs, like some big TV. Like, damn. They are killing it. But yeah, I'm looking for the value.
What a lot of people would like to see, honestly, with the Montgomery County courses, if you want to talk about them, they have 9 courses, right? They're doing well. There's this private public thing. They just renovated an area, not the golf course, but they renovated they created this kind of winery over at the Poolsville Golf Course rebranded it as Crossvines, right? So they spent a lot of there and they created this kind of wine destination. You know, I think they did some upgrades to the golf course, you know, maybe reseated tee boxes and sand.
Yeah.
They didn't, but I think what a lot of golfers would love to see, they've got 9 golf courses. Like you just said, they're doing well. They've got county money coming in. They do have tax money coming in. Shut one down and renovate it. You know, redo some greens. Bring in an architect. Like you've got 9. You can afford to shut one down or shut 9 holes down for a season and make them better. Those courses have not, their greens haven't improved as far as like, let's redesign the greens and make them better, higher quality greens in forever.
I want to let the county know, because I'm sure they're listening, and they should start with Little Bennett. Even though Little Bennett is one of the nicer courses, the ones they charge more for, those greens there are somewhat ridiculous. Like they are overly sloped. Have you played Little Bennett at all recently, Alex?
Not recently, but I've certainly played.
Let's get over there and play together. There are a couple holes where you're going to be like, yeah, what the heck were they thinking on this? Like, this is stupid. Like, there's a hole. They flipped the 9s years ago, and I'm still kind of struggling. I want to say it's hole 13 or 14. It has a green that literally only has 2 pinnable locations because it is so severe. It's either front right or back right. And every, like, 80% of the green is a slope, and they never pin it at the bottom of the green. So it is so challenging. There are multiple greens that aren't that bad, but are just so severely sloped where if you're above it, you're like, I hope I can 3-putt this green. This is because I already know this is ridiculous. Yeah, I would like to talk about that. I don't know but how do you convince Montgomery County, who's raking cash in hand over fist because people are showing up and they're filling up tee sheets, to close down 9?
Yeah, no, it's not. Like, it's not easy. I mean, you'd also have a riot because, you know, people, you know, the golfers that want to play them, you know, like them, and a huge contingent would not be happy to have them closed for any portion of the golfing season, or B, have them changed because not everybody's in agreement that, you know, they could be better, and then B, it would also shine a light to people, to taxpayers that don't play golf, that you're spending taxpayer money to you know, change the design of a golf course that seemingly is fine. So that's the challenge with renovating municipal golf courses that are doing well.
I agree. I like this idea. I do like talking about this, and I kind of want to like let this be known after I've talked bad about all these courses and said different things. I know that there are some good players who really look for the challenge on a golf course. You know, like they don't want it to be easy. I know that there's talk about green, that green complex is really good at Worthington Manor, even though like a 15 handicap is walking away, like pulling their hair out. Like they want to see it be challenging. So it's different strokes for different folks across the board. I know not everybody's going to agree with me or you, and there might be people who are new to the game who will listen to this and say like, well, that's, I don't agree with that at all. And I think there are better players who will say, I don't agree with this at all. Like it's all over the map, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. I just don't make enough money to justify like spending that much on golf. When does it stop? And it's not going to stop, right? Like they're just going to keep inching up. Yeah, I know. Just like house prices and everything else and inflation. I know everything's through the roof. Sorry.
More people are moving to the area. More homes are being built in all sorts of fashion. Sprawl is continuing. And so that will only create more golfers, and there's not new golf courses being built, you know, close to the city.
Well, then I think we will need to figure out a rating system for the indoor golf soon. Like I really like the vibe at this one better than the other.
Sure. Yeah,
because that's all going to be able to afford suit, even though that's expensive.
Sure.
Well, I could talk and talk and talk.
Where I was about to say something, I lost my train of thought. So I, let me ask you this. So this is PGA Championship week that we're recording this, and we were texting earlier on, and you said you didn't have a lot to add to PGA Championship. And my question for you is, why not? Like, is it just life is just busy that you haven't been paying attention, or that professional golf interests you that little right now?
Both. Life is busy. Honestly, 5 years ago, I don't think I'd miss many shots of a tournament, that which is lame to say, but I used to like consume every bit of tournament that was broadcast on the Golf Channel, NBC, CBS. Like I was living for it. And nowadays I'm more of a like tune in on Sunday, maybe, and see a couple holes, or like I do get up a little bit for the majors, but I'm about as deep as like hoping that Rory wins, since I know he just won this past week at Wells Fargo, or I kind of like, is Brooks going to do it again? Like I'm intrigued by those storylines a little bit, but not enough to like consume it. Like I do. I feel like I've grown in other interests. I like F1 almost as much as I like the PGA Tour now. Like I'm into racing, 'cause I do think it's an easier, more consumable window of watching a race rather than watching a golf tournament for hours on end. And maybe we can save this for another time, some of the problems I think with PGA Tour and what I think could fix it. But yeah, just not watching as much. But yes, life is also in the way, and I'm much more busy. I mean, I'm in the process of moving right now, like selling a house, moving. Like that's the kind of stuff where I'm like, I don't have time for that.
Yeah, I hear you.
How about you?
I mean, I certainly watch a lot less week to week, but majors, absolutely, I get up for and I'll get into, and I'll enter my pools, I'll place a couple bets, and I'll watch as much as I can. But the one big thing what I find interesting is, you know, going back to even the YouTube golf thing and just life getting busy, and you know, we both have kids. Like I personally, at least at my house, I've totally lost control of the remote control. You know, like I'm fighting to get what I want to watch on TV a lot of times. Luckily, my 8-year-old is into golf and he's down to watch a golf tournament. But what I find interesting is the PGA Tour and the golf world is understands that this YouTube golf phenomenon is not going away. So much so that they had this whole Myrtle Beach classic qualifier where they brought 16, you know, YouTube influencers, some more so than others into whatever. But I'm just saying that they at least recognize that exists. What's crazy is you can't go, like last week was the Quail Hollow, the Wells Fargo and Quail Hollow. You know, I was busy coaching baseball all weekend, didn't really watch any of it. If I wanted to watch the final round, like I should be able to just go to YouTube and watch the telecast, but it doesn't exist because they haven't caught up to that, unless I'm just can't find it. But like, you know, you can find like, you can find a little like 3 or 4 minute highlight reel, but you can't watch it.
Okay. What do you mean you can't watch it? Why don't I'm still lost. Like you can't, like if you're I saying they go don't on, put the broadcast watch, on YouTube.
If I want to watch it on Tuesday, if I want to watch it on demand, like if I want to watch the final round, Rory and Xander going at it on Tuesday, I can find a few highlights, but I can't watch the entire round edited in a really consumable form at 11 o'clock at night on Tuesday. I can just watch it the way you can watch, you know, the good guys. Like I'd rather watch Rory and Xander on my own time, not the good guys. You know, but PGA Tour hasn't caught up with that kind of concept.
I feel like the Masters figured that out, right? You can watch shot by shot for any individual player and see their entire round whenever you want, like which is cool. I would even say to the NFL, if I miss a Commanders game, Commanders fan here, it's a hard existence. If I miss the game, as soon as the game's over, the NFL on YouTube will have like a 15-minute video where they will show you all of the first downs, all of the turnovers, touchdowns, field goals, and boom, like you can breeze through any game to the point where I'm like, when I'm watching a game that's not the Commanders, I'm like, why am I not just waiting until tomorrow to watch this in 15 minute form? Why am I sitting in front of the TV for 3 hours? But yeah, I mean, the NFL like MLB, figured it out.
MLB's done that forever with like the replay of the baseball game every night that's half as long as the actual game. But like,
you make a great point for golf.
As you're talking, I just to make sure I'm not wrong, I'm going to see if I can find it real quick. Like, well, if I type in Wells Fargo Championship 2024 final round, okay, I find a highlights. I find a couple of good things, but there's a 7-minute video, and there's one where it just shows all of Rory McIlroy's shots.
That's what I thought you would see. And that's the hard part about golf.
And then I see a little some other 4 or 5 minute videos. Yeah,
it's the hard part, right?
They're getting better. I'm not getting.
They are better, like it's easy to show a Commanders game. It's an MLB game. It's two teams versus each other. You're trying to see maybe somebody who was leading a tournament who falls off, but they're not going to show you all that. They're going to just show you the guy who won and what he did to get to the win. It's too big of a field maybe to give it in that consumable of a form.
Everybody remembers NFL films. Remember NFL films? Yeah. So they used to do the recap of, you know, what happened the previous week and go game by game. And it was just like the production value was like off the charts. And it was like so dramatic. Like every sports league should be doing that with every event. You know, maybe harder in baseball and basketball. There's so many games, but the PGA Tour could absolutely do that. Like every weekend, condense the four rounds into like a 60-minute highlight world, which I think they do at majors, but like they should do that with every event. All right. Well, listen, let's end it there. This is a fun conversation. I mentioned to you, and I've said to listeners so far of the Surrender Birdies podcast, that my kind of goal for this is to have certainly more different guests on, but also I'd love to have, you know, kind of a rotating, you know, 4, 5, 6, 8, whatever, no set number of guys that come on, you know, periodically. So,
right.
And I bring that up to say, I'd love to have you back on. We can, you know, maybe later in the season and talk about what's going on and some new topics.
Oh, I was going to say, did I make the cut then? Like that, I'm a maybe.
Sure.
I like it.
Sure.
All right. I like it.
Yeah, I'm still putting together the field. There's no cut yet.
I appreciate it, Alex. Anytime you let me know. And maybe my listeners will hear you on the Mediocre Golf podcast as well.
Love it. Love it. All right, man. We'll leave it there. But good catching up, and we'll talk soon. We'll get out and play soon.
Thanks for having me, Alex.